My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
There is one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations, today only, up to $25,000. We need to put every dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across the country informed. Give right now and generously at marketplace.org/donate. In your spreadsheet for personal finances, where is the column for feelings? I'm David Brancaccio. First, the Biden administration has its last military aid package of the year for Ukraine. It comes amid stalled negotiations with Congress over Ukraine money for next year, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
The Defense Department says it's sending up to $250 million worth of equipment to Ukraine. That includes air defense system components, Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, ammunition for rocket systems, and Javelin anti-armor systems. The Biden administration has requested about $60 billion more for Ukraine. It's part of a supplemental package that includes aid for Israel and border funding. The bill has run into a logjam on Capitol Hill. Congressional Republicans want more money for the border and tougher immigration policies. Negotiations are continuing. In a statement, Secretary of State Antony Blinken says it's, quote, imperative that Congress act swiftly as soon as possible. A European Union aid bill for Ukraine is also stalled. It was blocked by Hungary. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Now, it is very hard to find or afford a place to live in America, and prices in general have not come down to what they were prior to pandemic. But as this year draws to a close, it is worth savoring the fact that the recession many predicted for this year never came. But it's even more than that. Diane Swonk is chief economist at the audit, tax, and advisory firm KPMG.
As we approach the dawning of a new year, we get to ring in something really extraordinary. Not only did the U.S. economy end 2023 much stronger than even those most optimistic about what could happen, but in some ways, it was the strongest economy on paper that we've seen in decades. Unemployment dropped below 4% for 24 straight months. We haven't seen anything like that since the height of the Vietnam War.
And so many prime working age people are back in the labor force that it's now around the highs we saw before pandemic.
The prime age participation rate among women hit a new record high, which took us over 20 years to get back to and exceed in 2023. The last time we saw it was the 1990s boom. And to top it all off, we had the most rapid drop in inflation, the most rapid deceleration in inflation that we've had outside of World War II, the Korean War, or the back-to-back recessions of the early 1980s, without the unemployment rate moving up. That is a win.
Now, that doesn't mean the economy cannot confound us in 2024, Diane told me, but sometimes you need to savor what we know.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org bookclub.
I don't know how you tend to feel about New Year's Day. That cold, gray light of the morning after can seem like party's over, back to the grind. But for many, the January sun comes up on a chance to embrace a new course that often includes resolutions about money, getting it, saving it, spending it. Chantel Chapman is an expert on money and the trauma that can surround money. She's co-founder of an educational program called Trauma of Money. She spoke with my colleague, Sabri Benishore.
New Year's resolutions. They're not known for lasting. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, we see this all the time. People get really excited and then they're not able to stick to it. It's too challenging. It's not set up in a sustainable way. And they end up basically like binging after doing the opposite of what they were intending to do.
How would you advise us to reframe our thinking to be more successful in achieving financial resolutions or goals?
I would recommend creating a plan from a place of sustainability. And so one of the ways that we can do that is, first of all, rooting in shame and understanding, yeah, was it shame that resulted in me wanting to create this resolution? And if it was, we want to create some space to be able to process that shame in a healthy way so we can create a more sustainable resolution. One of the ways that we can do that is by maybe having like a New Year's resolution friend that we do this with, because one of the antidotes to shame is pro-social, it's connection. Another thing is sometimes when we create a resolution, maybe it's like no spending this month. Our brain is used to a certain amount of shopping, and that shopping is giving us an increase in our dopamine baseline every month. All of a sudden, we've removed that. You're going to want to get the dopamine in a different way. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like, I'm not going to, you know, spend money shopping on this, but I will allow myself to go get like a latte every 3 days or something.
Yeah. You know, I know there are a lot of people out there as well who are kind of, you know, perfectionists, and they will be very unkind to themselves if they slip up in any way. How do you convince someone like that to be a little nicer to themselves?
One of the ways to teach people, I think, to shift is to understand the impact. So what is the cost of you being unkind to yourself? Most people will realize that it doesn't help them move forward. It doesn't feel good to their nervous system, and it doesn't have more benefits than it actually cost. And then I would ask, what are the benefits to being kind to yourself? And then when you can map that out, you can see that being kind and having compassion is going to create a more supportive environment for your nervous system to be able to move forward and do whatever you're trying to do around money.
Chantel Chapman is a financial trauma researcher and the co-founder of Trauma of Money. Chantel, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
In the Marketplace Morning podcast, that conversation also turns to money and addiction. Our producers are James Graham, Olivia Wilson, Nick Perez, Ariana Rosas, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. Our senior producer is Meredith Gerritsen-Morby. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.